Hello, welcome to Base Camp for Men. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that gives you insights and resources in how to live a more courageous life. We look to assist you on your hero's journey in any way that we can. Truth is our compass, humanity, our tribe. Welcome and let's get started. Hello, Base Campers. I hope you're all doing well. There's something really sweet for me whenever I get to chat with a younger man who is doing and leading men's work in men's groups. The conversation is always authentic and real, and even though we've gone over many of the themes that are central to the challenges that men face on this show many times, it always seems fresh and relevant and alive, and today's conversation is no exception. My guest and I tackle all sorts of things that are relevant to men and those that love them. We talk about the importance of getting out of your comfort zone, and what happens when you don't. We cover male initiation and ask ourselves, and you, dear listener, how do you know when life's inevitable initiations are enough or when you need accelerated growth? And if you're looking for accelerated growth, what does that look like? We also cover the perception that all men's groups are weird, soft, or religious. Do men's groups have to be those things? We also talk about male loneliness and how widespread and important it is as a teacher. And lastly, we talk about male role models and how it takes more than just the father to teach a boy how to be a man. It requires the friends, uncles, elders, and community to help the young man fully arrive at manhood. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Two men sitting around the fire speaking truth about what men are really facing and how we can support one another. Enjoy the episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Stand Up Now Apparel. Stand Up Now has amazing designs centered on God, family, freedom, and patriotism. They use only the softest cotton in their designs and have gear for the whole family. There's something for everyone, Base Campers. I know you're going to love their products. Go support them at www.standupnowapparel.com and use the code BASECAMP to receive a 10% discount and free shipping. And now, on to our interview. My guest today is Joshua Aranda. Joshua is a father, an executive coach, and an ultra endurance athlete. He's also the CEO and co-founder of Mission Matters Group, a consulting agency dedicated to transforming and optimizing operations for nonprofit organizations. Here is my interview with Joshua Aranda. All right, I am here with Joshua Aranda, CEO, ultra marathoner, men's group leader, men's work leader, and podcaster, Joshua Aranda. Joshua, welcome to Base Camp for Men. It's great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Tony. It's great to be here.
Yeah, you know, I was just telling my wife, you know, she goes, who are you interviewing today? I go, Joshua Aranda. She goes, who's that? I go, well, he's doing men's work. He's got a mission that's helping men, and I'm just really excited to talk to him because I as my listeners know, these men's shows and men's work and talking about male psychology and hero's journey were a really strong part of those first two seasons of Base Camp. And now we're in, you know, season eight. We've gone all over the map in terms of what we talk about and what we're passionate about and what's interesting. So I was just really excited to touch base with you because it's still a topic that I just absolutely adore and love. And I think it serves men. Before we really get going, though, I wanted to give you a chance to introduce yourself, like where you grew up, maybe your family, where you live now, and kind of anything relevant, what you do for work. And then we'll get into the meat of the interview.
Right on. Yeah. So actually, I'm a Midwesterner. I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, and I'm the baby of five. Great relationships with all my siblings. I've worked with most of my siblings and my dad, which has been really cool. I met my wife in college at St. Louis University, and we got married pretty quickly. We were both 23, lived in St. Louis for a few years, and then we did a stint out in Portland, Oregon, and Vancouver, Washington. We didn't have kids yet, and so we wanted to explore a bit, be close to mountains, be close to the coast, so we did a stint out there. My brother was out there as well. And we bought a house together, me, my wife, and my brother, which was pretty cool. And then he got married. We moved across the street from them in Vancouver, Washington, and now found ourselves in Monument, Colorado. We've been here for the last 5 or 6 years. But we have three kiddos now, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I have Jack, Noah, and Nora, and they're 8, 6, and three. And they're just like, They're so much fun. It's like an incredible ages, and all they want to do is jump on the trampoline with dad, and we have the best time. So really enjoying being a dad. That's my primary job. From a career standpoint, me and my dad started a consulting business called Mission Matters Group back in 2011. And I've been doing that. I took over as CEO in 2019. And yeah, we consult with small, medium-sized nonprofits and for-profits, helping them leverage technology, helping their leadership teams function more effectively. And then on the side, I also am a part of Unrationed, which is a men's group helping guys be better fathers, be better coworkers, better leaders, and have some fun while they're doing it.
That's great. God, what a full life you have. I just love it, man. You've got it all going on. You know, you were in near my hometown when you were in Vancouver. I grew up in Longview, which is a blue collar logging town, not too far from Vancouver. We used to play the Vancouver high schools in all the sports. So yeah. Did you grow up a big Cardinals fan? You must've been, right?
You know what? I wish I could say, I feel like I would be doing a disservice. Like, I am a Cardinals fan because I was in St. Louis, but I can't say that I love baseball. But so fair weather fan, I guess.
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. You know, how did you end up? I'm always interested in getting people's kind of like, they almost always have something that led them into men's work. Some guys back in the day, like myself, like we did the Mankind Projects, New Warrior Training. That was an initiation. And then, you know, that led to everything that came after for me, because after that I was properly initiated. But there's all kinds of stories of people that men that lead men's groups start communities to help men, which there's not enough of, in my opinion. There's still room for like 20 great organizations that do that stuff. But how did you zero in on male psychology or the challenges that men face and make that maybe part of what you were going to be doing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I attribute it to two instances. When I moved to Portland, me, my wife, and brother were going to summit Mount Hood. And we did summit Mount Hood, but while we were up there, we got caught in like a whiteout condition. And it was like, you know, it's not a huge mountain, but it was kind of like everything that you read in, you know, Into Thin Air, if you're familiar with that book. Where
Mount Hood's a pretty big mountain, dude.
Certainly puckered us up. But so we got to the top of it, and me and my wife went up to the summit, and my brother took a picture of us. Within like 3 minutes, like, he went up with my wife and I took a picture of them. And it's like literally a 3 minute timestamp. And between our two pictures, they were like engulfed in this cloud, and it just got really bad from there. So we were caught in, you know, 40, 50 mile an hour winds. I mean, just snow's dumping on us. And neither my wife nor I were super skilled mountaineers. Not great at like ice climbing, but we made our way up there. So we had to bail on our first route, and we went down a different route that we were not super familiar with, but it was less risky, let's say. Well, we rolled on another group that some guy had fallen from, you know, pretty far up. There was blood everywhere, and they were just in like disarray. So we like figure out how to get off of this mountain. We like walk this guy down. And it was the first time, I think, in my life where I was like, holy crap, life is very, very fragile. I am, you know, at the time I'm like 26 and invincible and, you know, can do whatever. And I felt so small and so unprepared for life because of that moment that I'm like, oh, like I was probably the limiting factor in that situation, like without the least amount of skills. And I just didn't want to do that. I didn't want to be that person, but I was terrified, not prepared, and put my wife in danger. I'm like, that's just not the man I want to be. So that kind of was like the first, I would say like rite of passage to say, I am so ill-equipped to be a man in this world. Mm-hmm. And then I think the second one was actually COVID. So I took over as CEO of Mission Matters Group in 2019, October of 2019, and then COVID hit.
Yeah.
And I was a hot mess, like for the first like 2 or 3 months. Like I thought I was going to lose the family business, you know, all those things. And I had a lot of ego, and I had all this stuff that was going on. I was resentful towards my dad at times and resentful towards my brother at times and, you know, resentful towards my situation. And I'm like, that's just not the person I want to be either. And so shortly after that, I got connected with Tony and Evan, and we all had similar ideas. And, you know, 2022, 2023, Unrationed was born. And it was largely out of like all three of us having these moments in time where we felt ill-equipped to be solid, healthy dudes in this world. And we didn't have a good pathway forward.
Yeah, that's a great story. And a terrifying, I mean, I was there on the mountain with you as you were telling it. I'm like, oh my God, I'm not prepared on the mountain either. If I, good Lord. And with my wife with me, that's like super vulnerable, right? You're like, oh my God, what did I do here? You know? And
yeah.
And so one of the things I wanted to ask you, you're an ultra marathon runner. I wanted, you know, comfort zone. How do you dance with comfort zone? Because like my listeners know, I'm a big proponent of getting out of your comfort zone. Now that could be doing a training like the New Warrior Training or doing a training like what you have, where you're consciously saying, look, pull me out of my comfort zone. Because I don't know about you, Joshua, there's a part of me that loves comfort. Right. Mm-hmm. Like I love it. Like I'm kind of a homebody, you know, I don't always want to get out of my comfort zone. But if I don't, it causes problems, much like what you had experienced on Mount Hood. That is happening to me. It will happen to me at 65, 70, 75. If I don't keep doing it, my comfort zone cannot let it shrink to the point where it's like, oh, I don't even like traveling anymore. You know, you see too many examples of men that don't take that road less traveled. So for me, it's been kind of a process of like every, you know, moment to moment or year by year, quarter by quarter, I have to consciously say, I've got to step out on the road less traveled consciously, or I'm going to get small. So, and there's plenty of time to be comfortable. I have plenty of habits that I'm like, I don't know if you should be doing that quite so much anymore. Even my coffee habit, I'm like, that's kind of a comfort zone for you, dude. You know, like you could probably do with less of that, but it would take getting out of your comfort zone. Like Tony, you have a lot of presuppositions that you can't function without coffee. You live in a cloudy city, Seattle. And if you don't have that, you know, it's like, I don't know if that's true. Yeah. It would be, I would have to explore the road less traveled for Tony to come to a different conclusion. And maybe there's more vitality with less coffee, but I have been unwilling to go there. Does that make sense?
Yes, very much so.
Okay.
I too am unwilling to go there. I have excessive amount of coffee, so you're in good company. I don't think I'm going to help you get out of that comfort zone.
Fair enough. So what's your take on that? Like, how do you facilitate that in other men, knowing that you also, you know, recognizing that there's a love of comfort, but our love of comfort sometimes can really bite us on the butt in terms of our personal growth?
Yeah. I think I have a lot to thank to my brother, Jared, who we climbed the mountain with, where I think he exposed me to adventure. So like discomfort in wilderness, let's say.
Mm.
And then I guess before that, my dad always expected like hard work. So for instance, even like I played soccer in college. And so it's like in my mind, I had to win the fitness challenge or whatever, which inherently and naturally is like uncomfortable if you're pushing that. And so I think I had a decent, maybe probably an unhealthy relationship with suffering, maybe going into my mid 20s where I somewhat enjoyed it. But I think now my perspective has shifted with discomfort, and that, you know, now I'm a dad, and more so earlier on in my life, it was like, I wanted to do something hard from an ego perspective. And I think now if I don't do hard things, I blur the lines between stuff. And so I go out and do something hard so that I come back a little bit softer. Some of my rough edges in life as a dad, as a husband, as a leader, get kind of worn down because I myself was humbled out there and doing something hard, and kind of like facing a potential failure or something. And so I'm very much a believer in it. And at the same time, I'd be lying if I didn't say there was some ego involved in it still, which I don't think is completely unhealthy. But like, I do want to know where a limit is, not to go past a point of no return, but just to say, do I know how far I can go? And if I'm throttling my capability, where else out there, where else am I throttling it in my life? So I always learn something as it relates to discomfort and kind of pushing a limit, if you will.
That's great. That's great. Is male initiation, is that still really important? Like there's precious few organizations that do, a good weekend where men will come out transformed because they're it's clear that they were initiated, right? And you could make the case of that the military is an initiation. It's not it doesn't represent all the archetypes because they're really leaning on the warrior archetype and stripping a young man of his identity and all that. And that isn't for sure an initiation. And the Mankind Project, Sacred Sons, there's a number of organizations that do them, but a lot of men, Joshua, will not sign up for a weekend. It takes something like, and I've always said this, like it takes something, a willingness to do something like the New Warrior Training, because you're an initiate. You don't know what's coming, and you're one of the 40 guys that doesn't know, and there's 80 men on staff readying for your arrival and your initiation. That just inherently sounds very terrifying to most men, as it should, because you're in the unknown. But can a man be properly initiated without like a conscious, weekend like that where life initiates him, like it did for you with the mountain, and I imagine a bunch of other things? Can life kind of initiate you bit by bit, and you just have to drop the ego or have a willingness for life to teach you and humble you and turn you into a slightly different version each chapter? And is that enough where you don't really have to do the New Warrior Training, or you don't have to do the military? Life will initiate you if you're willing, but how do you do that? How do you get yourself ready for that when you're trying to pay the bills, being a father and stuff? A lot of men out there are like, I don't have the bandwidth for that. And so what would you say to them? Like, how do you do that? How do you embrace? Maybe they like the way it sounds, but they're like, well, how do I make room for it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I feel like my inclination is to go on a couple different tangents, but
Take us there.
I think we talk a lot about like I do think initiation is going to find you one way or the other. And we'll talk a lot about like hard things, like something hard in life is either going to find you or you're going to intentionally choose it so that you are prepared when it finds you, but it will inevitably find you. Right. So I think Mount Hood, I thought it was just going to be a leisurely stroll and have great views on top of a mountain. And it became something that was one of the most transformational aspects of my life, but I had no intention of it being that. I thought it was just going to be a great moment. Another dude in the group, Evan, he talks about his mom dying as like his form of initiation. I think he was 21 or 22, and it just kind of rocked his worldview. Right. So I think if you give something enough time, assuming that, we have another day, something hard is going to find you that's going to make you question how you're showing up in the world. I think when we choose something like Mankind Project or Sacred Sons or these more intentional, curated isn't the right word. I don't think, but like they're designed to experience a certain outcome in you. Those accelerate learning curves. So I think in my mind, the question becomes like, am I willing to wait for the thing that initiates me, or is the risk too high and I need to delve into this on my own? In my mind, it kind of becomes a cost benefit analysis of like, man, I could go my whole life and not be the fullest version of myself, or just wait for the thing that's going to help me be a better man or a better husband or a better leader or whatever, a better neighbor. And that just seems high risk in my opinion, because we don't know when it's going to happen, and maybe that's control coming out. Again, like people say, like health problems, like you might have 99 problems, but when you have a health problem or like a real scare, you have one problem, and that's the only thing that matters. Because if we don't have breath, we don't have the opportunity to be a better version of ourselves. So I think in my mind, it's like something's going to find you. you figure out what role you want to play in that thing. Do you want to be more prepared or less prepared? And so it kind of brings the urgency, in my opinion.
That's great. That's a great answer. You know, when I was younger, I think I was a little snobby because I had done the Mankind Project, and became a group leader in there and stuff like that. I was really like, oh, you got to do this. But now I'm almost 60 and I see how much initiation there is in the men around me. Coming from things like death of a parent, a wife got sick, or wife divorced me, lost my job. Uh-oh, I've got a health issue. Something's going on with my kid. Like, it's to your point, life is going to initiate you on a timeline. Like, you're not going to be untouched by challenges, tragedies, things that just break your heart. Like, those things are coming. And I like the way you put, like, how urgent is it? Do you want to put yourself in an accelerated learning environment? Because sometimes things get so bad, you're just like, I can't put this down, or I'm addicted over here. I'm not figuring this thing out. And my people around me that love me are telling me I'm not figuring it out. And since I can't do it on my own, let me put myself into a weekend training and just surrender and just lose all that ego, and even losing the ego that I can't figure it out. Like, let me strip it down so that I can function in a different way. And I think, I've said it a bunch of times, like, if a properly lived life, I believe you'll be a different version of yourself in each chapter. And a chapter doesn't have to be a 6 month or 2 year period, but there's got to be chapters. Your life is an important story, that you're telling, and it's for the benefit of the people around you as much as yourself, right? Like, you're telling a story about, is this really a hero's journey, or am I a hypocrite? Can I be a different version of myself and model that for my kid? Or am I so addicted to comfort and dopamine that I'm just going to stay in here and talk a good game, but really not be a different version, And so I love, you had said you have a blog post. I went through some of your blogs. There's really good writing on there. I wish there was more. I think whoever, do you do all the blog posts, or do you send?
No, it's primarily Evan on our team.
He's
He's
a,
great
yeah,
writer.
he's a great writer. I clicked through and grabbed a couple, but I was also like, God, there should be another 30 or 40 of them. I'd love to write something there and contribute, if you don't mind,
Heck
if
yeah.
that would be. But a couple of them, he said, there was one called, "Why Do I Feel Like Men's Groups Are Soft, a Weird Soft, or Religious and not for Me." Why is that, do you think? That's the listening. I've run a whole bunch of men's group, but it is still, men don't really want to do it because they think it's soft, weird, or religious, right?
I mean, I think I was talking about this with a buddy actually yesterday, and he had gone through a couple men's groups. He's older than I am, but he was talking about some groups that he had been through where it like seemed like forced vulnerability, where it's just like, somebody says something and you're looking around the room and it's like tears on command. And it was like, it's like I didn't feel that. I didn't want to cry, but I felt this weird awkwardness that I should because everybody else was doing it. And not saying that's wrong or right. I think everything has its purpose. And but I think a lot of guys think that they're supposed to be something when they go into these things, as opposed to letting these things reveal who they really are. And I think that confusion is what makes it feel awkward, or maybe they're not in a religious setting and that's all that they're finding that maybe resonates with them in some way, shape, or form. But they're going to be a hypocrite when they go in there because they don't believe in God or universe or whatever. So it's interesting. Like there's all these like qualifiers, if you will, that I think are somewhat self-imposed. That we think we have to be a certain way to engage in the material. And it's just somewhat of a fallacy. Like if someone has like a hard and fast requirement, they're going to tell you what it is in the men's group. And I think once you get exposed to some content of one group, you'll realize what's resonating and what's not. And I don't believe all content is for all people. You got to figure out what's actually going to, you know, speak into you and help bring the best thing out in you.
Yeah. You know, I was fortunate. We coming off of the Mankind Project in New, I was living in New York City at the time, and we had just an amazing mids group. I mean, it grew, there was like 17 of us. And if you were in that group, Joshua, you'd have been like, holy shit, this is a group. This is like, nothing forced. And they gave us so many tools. Like, we used to do clearing. So somebody would get pissed off at somebody. And so it would be circle it up. And, you know, what are your judgments? What's the data? What's the judgment? What do you feel? What are you feeling? And sometimes I'm feeling like, I'm fucking pissed at you, Joshua. Like, fuck you. And what are your projections? You know, then you own the projections. Like, my projections that I'm owning is I can be arrogant. I can be a know-it-all. Like, there was so much raw shadow work in that group. Yeah, that it was like everybody was growing by leaps and bounds. I mean, we had, it was New York City. So we had Black, white, gay, straight, Jews, Christians, non-believer, it didn't matter. Like, it was just the common theme was a bunch of men working on their shadows, working on the shit that was unresolved from their own parenting, you know, where their dads and moms and but I've never been able to really replicate that. And a lot of things shifted online because people are like, oh, I don't want to drive across Seattle to do it. Yeah. You know, like, let's just do it online. And that's like, it loses something when you do it online. You could still capture authenticity and some of that stuff. But when you're right there in the space, when you see the eyeballs of the men and you can really be in their auric space and all that, it really just adds something. And so, you know, that was, you know, a phenomenal thing, but also I haven't really been able to recreate forget expectations and going, look, forget trying to create like the Warrior Dogs again. That was a one-time shot. It's like having a great rock band and you're like, well, we can't be Soundgarden anymore. We're going to do this other thing, you know? And so, but anyways, that was a tangent. I wanted to talk, there was another good post that I thought, this has been on my mind, the topic of male loneliness and just loneliness in general. The title was, Why Do I Feel Lonely Even Though I Have a Wife, Kids, Friends, and a Successful Life? Really great writing. And I wanted to chat with you about the topic of loneliness. And to me, I'll let you talk first and then I'll weigh in a little bit. But for me, it's such an important teacher to me, for men. We typically think of it as something that's really bad, but I'm not convinced that it's bad. I think we learned some things from it that we'll get into, but I wanted to ask you because I think I think a lot of men suppress or deny that they're lonely because they have all it. And I think it can really confuse men because it's like, I have everything. I've got three kids. I've got all this. Why am I noticing this pattern? And sometimes I just feel just a painful loneliness.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question before I respond?
Yeah, of course.
So can you maybe delineate or tell me how you think about loneliness versus being alone?
Well, I think loneliness is separate. I think there's this kind of existential feeling of being alone that is not the same as getting you time. I think for me, I can feel the pangs of loneliness throughout my life. At the same time, I love being alone. I love alone time. It's when I recharge. I'm a super social person, but I really recharge when it's me. And I just love being by myself. And however, I'm also, I can feel loneliness. They're not quite the same thing to me.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Because part of it was like making sure we do have that alone time. And I didn't know what you were referring to as like loneliness being a good teacher or being alone is a good teacher, you know, just being alone with your thoughts, both of which are great. I think, you know, I'm trying to think back of the times that I felt the most loneliness. And it certainly was the COVID era. And it wasn't because of COVID and like isolation. It was because, how do I say this? We had a big cash flow issue. Like we lost a bunch of contracts, like literally March 18th, you know, right after it was declared a pandemic. Mm-hmm. So I felt alone And I felt loneliness because the things that were stable in my life, like my relationship with my dad and my brother and like working with them, they were not there. And so I felt like I had this burden that was my responsibility and only I could fix. And the stories in my head were, you are not fit to fix this. Mm. And so I just went more inward, inward, inward. And I was a prisoner in that loop of, you don't have anybody that you can call and lean on, and you don't have the skills to get out of here. Just stay where you are and suffocate from this. And that felt like a very, very lonely, isolated spot, right? I can talk about that now. And I don't think I had the words to articulate it, you know, in that moment. The people who got me out of it were my sister, who I worked with, and my wife. You know, my wife and I fortunately were able to talk through a bunch of that stuff. I remember we went on this, well, I like went into her room, you know, after like getting like the fourth email saying they had to cancel a contract. And like these stories had been going on for a few days in my head. And like, I just started like weeping in front of her. And, you know, I got through it. And about 2 hours later, we were on a walk and I'm like, hey, I'm really sorry that I was crying that, you know, crying in front of you or whatever. Not like I can't cry in front of her, but like, I just felt bad that like I had nothing to say except cry. And she's like, yeah. Oh, baby. She's like, you weren't crying. She's like, you were straight weeping. And yeah. Like, yeah. And I think it was an important distinction in that, like, it was a breakdown and it was, yeah. I felt completely separate from everybody in my life. And that, again, that is a truly, to your point, a great, great teacher. Because if I don't know that feeling, I don't know how sweet it is on the other side and what I have on most day-to-day basis, because I intentionally curate connectedness and community with people that bring the best out in me. But I can't forget that, because that dark spot I feel like is just around the corner waiting for me, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I went through two bouts of depression when I was younger, and you know, it was the first one in particular, people, the friends I had, now this was pre-Mankind Project and all that. But I had the experience of like, people did not want to hear, because I had kind of a happy-go-lucky personality. I was funny. I engaged with people readily. And when I first was hitting it and I started to try to hint that I was going through this thing with a lot of loneliness and a lot of isolation, nobody wanted to hear that out of me. Huh. They were just like, oh God, you know, and I wasn't really good at maybe reaching the right people. I was, you know, looking back, I was probably like, you know, looking for support in the wrong areas, and I did not have a good support group. These days, I could still feel bouts of loneliness. I just don't, for me now, you know, I have a really good life. I have a really connected life, but I can still feel pangs of loneliness. And I always just, I think, am I not getting enough God right now? Am I missing that divine connection? Am I missing alone time for myself? Or is it doing something? It like spurs me a little bit. Like, is it doing something fun with my wife, or calling one of my dear friends that is like totally like will support me and let me just talk that through. It comes and goes and passes in ways that I don't recognize it as something that's bad anymore. It's more just like, okay. And I, yeah. To the point where I even told my 19-year-old, you know, I like to go out. He works in the trades. He's 19. He's learning how to do, you know, home remodels, and that's what he likes to do. But we go out, he loves to go out for coffee and omelets and brunch. So I take him out to get my one-on-one time with him and ask him, nice. What stuff. Yeah, that's become a ritual of ours. And I just remember telling him a couple different times, I said, look, just so you know, like, you're going to have bouts of loneliness as a man. You're going to feel alone, even though you got a girlfriend, even though your best friends are still, you know, within a mile, you're going to feel lonely. It's going to feel bittersweet. And just so you know, you can't, like, the phone isn't going to keep loneliness at bay. Like TikTok or, you know, all the things that you get on your phone when you're bored, restless, or lonely, it's not going to fix it. It's really a spur for you to go inside, to get your alone time, to get with God, to get with yourself in a meaningful way. It's more of a calling for that than to desperately look for a salve that isn't going to really help it that much. And so, and I think he gets it on his own level. You know, he listens, and then you just get off the topic. Like, you say something maybe a little profound, and then just leave it alone and go back to, you know, talking about soccer, you know, like the Mariners or whatever. And you like drop it in there. So I don't know if that opens anything up for you before we talk about the books that you've got on your website that are really great too. So,
yeah, I mean, it's hard not to dive into that. I've always appreciated when my dad says what he needs to say, regardless of what age I've been. You know, he dropped some nuggets, you know, at my age, and I still remember things that he said when I was, you know, 14 years old, and he's dropping me off at, you know, high school soccer tryouts. I'm interested, does your 19-year-old son see the benefit of this work, or like, does he understand your work?
You know, I don't. To an extent, he sneaks on, I think, and listens to episodes of Basecamp for Men at times. I know he's listened, and he, in some ways, Joshua, it's funny, like, my dad has listened to every single episode of Basecamp for Men. There's 330 episodes.
Man, that's awesome.
It has completely transformed my relationship with my father. And my son clicks on things, particularly if I send him something that I think he would really enjoy, he'll click and comment on it. In some ways, I'm making these episodes for him and anybody that, you know, it's not really for me. It's to serve humanity, and my son's part of that. And I love that I'm kind of known for it, for Basecamp for Men, and that he talks about it like, oh, my dad, he's the creator of Basecamp for Men. Like, he says it, I know he introduces me that way. And so it's part of my legacy. And so I don't have to tell him everything, because he can click on this episode you and I are having about loneliness and initiation and getting out of your comfort zone. He can click and hear Joshua's perspective, because I'm a big believer that it's not just dad, it's the uncles, it's all the friends of the father that bring the man forth. And so part of Basecamp maybe for me was leaving him traces of what's of the hero's journey and the road less traveled, and trusting himself, knowing that maybe I won't have all those conversations with him when he's 30, 40, 50 years old. It hopefully will be other men, but also he could click here as a legacy. I'm leaving it as a legacy. So, yeah.
I love that. Yeah. I think that's, you and I share a similar perspective. Like, anything that I write a decent amount on LinkedIn, but anything that I write, I think about, okay, my kids reading that, and it's more of a gift for them. I could care less if, you know, five people read it on LinkedIn, but it forces me to at least put something out there that hopefully is a gift that I can pass on to my kids, whether I get to be the one to share it or, you know, they stumble upon it. But I love that.
Yeah, that's great. You know, there's not a ton of men's, what are considered classic men's books. There's a handful. And there's three mentioned on your website. You've got Iron John, King, Warrior, Magician, Lover, and Adam's Return. I've never read Adam's Return, actually. So I've got that. I'm ordering that right now.
Nice.
So Iron John, really the mythopoetic story that kicked off the Mankind Project. Robert Bly was very instrumental in starting the Mankind Project. That was a core book. King, Warrior, Magician, Lover, again, Mankind Project, loved the archetypes and created the structured weekend out of that. And you know, I had two other books that I wanted to mention, and I want to get your comments on the books. There was a book by drawing a blank on the one. It was by Sam Keen called Fire in the Belly. And that was in that same era of Iron John, that when we arrived in the Mankind Project and started doing men's work and stuff, everybody had read Iron John and Fire in the Belly. That's the two that everybody was like, oh my God. And then the other one with a terrible title, I hate the title. The book is pure gold. It's probably, to me, still the greatest men's book ever. And that is The Way of the Superior Man. By David Data. That book, to me, I'm like, read that book and tell me that you're not up for men's work. Because that book, if it doesn't speak to you, like, it is so raw, authentic, and honest.
It's about, so good.
Oh my God. It is to me, that's the one book. And I always say it's a terrible title. It's kind of an off-putting title. It sounds elitist, like, oh yeah, the men that do that are superior. It's like, well, forget the title, read the book and tell me it is not life altering, because I could read it today and be like, God dang, he was so far ahead of his time.
We read it as a group. We would do, you know, different events, and leading up to this event that we did last March, in Sayulita, Mexico, we all read that book going into it, and the type of dialogue that it stimulated was so good.
Oh my God. Totally. What about Adam's Return? Tell me a little bit about that, 'cause I don't know that book. Is it more Christian oriented?
Yeah. So Richard Rohr, I believe, is a Jesuit priest. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about Richard Rohr is that, like, he had some times that he had some like major issues with the church, but he didn't want to leave the church. He wanted to help, you know, improve it by being inside. So I think he's ahead of his time. But yeah, it's one of those core books that, you know, most guys that I think we like to get for everybody as they're joining the group.
Love it. Love it. Well, we're starting to wind down. I want to give you a chance to just talk about Unrationed, the community that you're building, and the men's work. Where can men find you? Just anything you want to mention about any creative projects that are going on right now that might benefit men.
Yeah, no, you know, we have a podcast, the Unrationed podcast, where we explore a lot of these topics. One of the things that we talk about is just pursuing extraordinary at work, at home, and at play. And so those are the primary domains that we put a lot of emphasis in. And we, you know, inject things like King, Warrior, Magician, Lover, and making sure we're operating in the light more so than the shadow sides. We have a community where we have three meetings at essentially every single week. They're all optional, but we have what's called a wake up call, and guys show up, they communicate their goals for the week, any tensions or anxiety they're bringing in, and some of the area that they're looking for accountability. And then on Fridays, we have a community call where we cover some type of topic around at work, at home, and at play. Like this week, one of our core values is bigger maps. And one of the guys in the community is sharing some things that he's running up against in work and just in his personal life. And he's going to have the whole community speaking into that. So he's going to kind of share the problem points. And our goal is to hopefully help accelerate those learning curves and get him to a better spot, or at least offer whatever we can. And then throughout the year, we host two primary events. We have our annual retreat. This year, we are hosting it right outside of Zion National Park. That's going to be in April. We're going to have 50 guys camping, two incredible guest speakers that have been on our podcast. And in the middle of it, we're going to be doing, the Zion Traverse, which has different distances, but you're going to get to do something hard and see some beautiful landscape, right inside of Zion National Park. And then, on an annual basis, a group of guys, does Rim to Rim to Rim. It's kind of our core initiation, if you will. So every year we take a group of guys to that, to cover some ground together. But yeah, you can find us on unrationed.com and reach out to us on LinkedIn. It's probably the best way.
Love it. Well, Joshua, thanks so much for coming on Basecamp for Men and sharing your insight, your wisdom. So great to talk to somebody with their sleeves rolled up in these super important areas for men. And you're creating this great community. I just love it. Come back anytime. Thanks for taking the time today. Good luck with all the work, and God bless you and your family. And just thanks again for making some room today for us.
Likewise, you too, Tony. Thanks so much.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. I'm going on Joshua's Unrationed podcast in September. I'm really excited to hang out with him and his team. So I will keep you posted on when and where you can find that one. Thank you, Base Campers. And we'll see you around the fire next week.
If you find value in our show and wish to show us some love, we are now making that very easy to do. You simply go to www.basecampformen.com and click on Donate Support Basecamp. You'll find an easy way to make either monthly donations for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate just once. We love the monthly donation and hope to build this up over the coming months, but any show of support is greatly appreciated, honestly. Thank you for your support and for helping to keep Basecamp as a resource on your hero's journey. That's our show for today. Thank you for listening. Men, good luck in all your endeavors, and good luck on your hero's journey. This is Tony Rezac, and you're listening to Basecamp for Men.